Well, Scott, you know, like you say in the beginning of each podcast, we might become better people too. And I think that you're hopefully turning me into a better person. So I'm not so jaded when people don't say hello.
Maybe we need to stop them, block the trail. I think and say, hey, my name's Scott. I want to be your friend. Let's move on.
That's exactly what I would say if you stopped me on the trail. I said, let's move on.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with interesting guests that teach us something about trail running, how to be a better runner, and hopefully a better human being. This is your first time visiting us. We hope you feel welcome.
Today, we're going to find out where we stand in the community of trail runners. Are you on the fringe or right in the middle? That's what we're going to discuss.
Don, I was looking through my drawer the other day, and I was really super excited and surprised at how much ExoSkin gear I have in my running drawer.
It's because they all work, Scott. I'm with you. They've got their base layers. Whether you're wearing sleeveless, short sleeve, three quarters, or long sleeve, they have it. They also have their compression bottoms. That's why your drawer is filled up, Scott. They've got shorts, mid shorts, long shorts. They got them all, and they have their Exo underwear.
And let's not forget where we started with ExoSkin, and that was the socks. They have so many different varieties of socks, and they have multiple colors. It's just really good stuff.
Do you remember when we all saw how many days we could go before we needed to wash them because of their great fabrics?
They have that copper technology in all their fabrics that prohibit the stinks. That's why you can wear them so long.
I call them the anti-funk material, Scott.
Trail Runner Nation members can get 10% off their order if you go to exoskin.us and use the code TRN. Don, one of my favorite new running snacks is Wonderful's pistachios. They come in a convenient little package, fits in your pocket, and boy, are they tasty out on the run, especially when they have a little salt on them. You know how we endurance runners love that salt.
They showed up on the step yesterday, Scott Ward, and I opened those packages, and I'll be honest, I couldn't stop loving them. Every flavor just so good. I had my favorite, the barbecue. Did you try those?
I haven't tried the barbecue yet, but there's one, the roasted and salted. Oh my gosh, they're so good. And they're healthy too. They're full of protein, Freeman.
Well, they have all 9 essential amino acids.
They're also one of the highest protein snack nuts. Each serving has 6 grams of complete protein and 12% of your daily value.
Whether you choose the classic in the shell or the already unshelled, that means no shell, Scott. You just pour them in your mouth and chew and go.
Check out more about Wonderful Pistachios at wonderfulpistachios.com.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
And my name is Scott Warr. And today we're going to talk about our community. We all love to belong to a community, and we belong to the Trail Runner Nation. And we're going to talk about where we belong. We have a couple organizations that recently concluded some surveys of the trail running community. And we're going to find out and talk about some of the aspects of that survey. And you might find that you belong right in the middle of that bell curve, or maybe you're a little bit onto the fringe a little bit. And we're going to have fun with that. It's kind of fun to see where you fall in that bell curve. The two organizations are Trail Runners Associations. One is the International Trail Runners Association, ITRA, and the other one is ATRA, which is the American Trail Runners Association.
Now, ITRA was a larger survey. They had up to 10,000 participants in over 100 countries. And ATRA, the American Trail Running Association, they had 1,300 participants and I guess one country. So we keep that in mind. And we always want to, being scientists that we are sometimes, we like to keep that in mind as we listen and process this data. Scott, I think you were going to lead off. We each picked out a couple of surveys, some of the things that we felt are interesting, and I think you're going to lead with the very first one.
Yeah, I think the average age is something that's interesting to me. Typically, you think that runners, especially if you look at the elite runners, the podium finishers, they're usually on the younger side. But when they did this survey, this broad survey, they found out that most trail runners fall within the age of 35 to 55, which kind of goes along with where a lot of people start running to get into it for health, when they start turning 30, start putting on a few pounds and fall in love with it.
Boy, I remember that's one of the things that drove me to the trail, Scott. I looked in the mirror and the person that was looking at me, it was not the guy that I thought it was. I said, who is this guy? And I said, I need to start running. And that's when I got out on the trail.
The nice thing about this age thing is it's really irrelevant when it comes to trail running. You can start in your teens. We've seen people out on the trail that are well into their 70s, 80s, 90s that are completing some of these long races. So you can kind of take age out of the mix when you're out there on the trail.
One of the things that makes me think about the age thing, we've all been around runners that have some gray on top of their head, but you look at their legs and they could be 30-year-old legs. It's like, how is this happening? But you know, the body is amazing. And if you use it, it retains some of its function.
You know, somebody that I was just picturing in my mind when you said that is Gordy Ainsley.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in his late 70s now, right?
But oh, no, I don't think so. We can do some background on that.
Yeah, hey, we should have done some research on this.
Wait, hold on. Ryan's on the call. We're going to do it like a Joe Rogan call out here. Hey, Ryan, look up Gordy Ainsley's age as we're talking about this. Scott, go ahead.
But my point is his legs, if you take from his hip down, his legs are still pretty toned. He can get out there and move.
He wears some pretty short shorts, so he's going to allow you to get a full look.
He's going to allow you to see a lot more leg than some of the others out there.
Which survey did that come from, Scott? Did I miss that?
That was from the ITRA survey, so the one 10,000 respondents.
Good, good.
It looks like Gordy Ainsley is 74 years old.
74.
I was right. into his 70s. Didn't I say that?
Let's do a callback, Ryan. Let's take a little clip of Scott when he said it and move it forward as well. And he said late 70s. So, Gordy, I got your back.
He's in his late 70s now, right?
My survey came from the ATRA, American Trail Running Association. And it's something that you and I have talked quite a bit about, Scott. And that is, do you wear hydration vests? And we've noticed that there's a lot more hydration vests being worn. When we started out, it was bottles only. What was carried and the way to go. But currently in 2022, 73.5% of the people responded, I hydrate by using a vest.
Yeah.
And that's something different.
3/4 of the people, that surprises me because I'm probably not in that category. Have you noticed that people are using hydration vests even on the shorter runs?
I noticed that they wear their hydration vest getting out of the car at the trailhead. They've got it on before they even need it. But the only advantage to wearing a vest is if you're running with poles, in my mind. That's why the only reason I would wear a vest is because I need my hands free. And so other than that, I prefer to run with bottles.
Yeah, I think I do. We're more of old school. Hey, do you think that there are still people out there that wear those? I don't even know what they're called.
I know what you're talking about.
Those little belts with the plastic clips, and you had these tiny little like 4-ounce bottles. So you look like Batman when you're running down the trail.
Scott, are you looking at a picture of my very first 50-mile run that I had those around my waist and I would pull up to the aid station with all 5 in my hand, hoping somebody could put ice in them and pour water in them. And they looked at me while they're rolling their eyes and they go, look at the new guy carrying all these bottles. What is he doing? I remember I was that guy.
Hey, on a side note, since we're just batting things around today, you and I recently worked an aid station at Western States, and they have these new spouts that go on coolers. You replace the little spout to fill up water bottles or whatever, and they have these like speed spouts. Did you ever fill up any water bottles at that aid station that day?
I did, but I had a hard time figuring out where that water was going to come. I just started pulling and shoving bottles underneath it.
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
You put the water bottle under there and you push the handle and it can fill a water bottle or a bladder in a matter of seconds. Pretty amazing things. You know, the one thing that I will say about the hydration bladders, it's kind of a pain in the butt for aid station workers, especially if it's a bladder. You know, a lot of hydration vests now have the bottles that go on the shoulders, little tiny bottles. But to pull a bladder out of a vest and get it out, fill it up. They're always cumbersome to fill up. And then you have to put the lid back on and then kind of cram it back into the vest. Not real convenient.
I can't let a hydration vest discussion go by without talking about what I hate most about them. And that is knowing how much you've drank along the way. If you're trying to monitor, measure, and make sure that you're not, you know, leaving out some ounces before the next aid station, it's hard to guesstimate just what's behind you.
Yeah. And speaking of old school, another thing that we saw down at that aid station, and if I can remember, I'll put it in the show notes. I have a photo of this, is one of the original winners of Western States, Jim Howard, ran the race again this year. And when he came through, I was ear-to-ear smiles when I saw how he was carrying his water. They were the smaller Gatorade bottles, and right. He had made his own handheld water bottles with duct tape, and he had two of those, and I was one of the people that got to take those and fill them up at the cooler, and I just thought, you know what, I love this, because I'm sure he can afford a hydration vest or nice handheld bottles, but he still likes the idea of his Gatorade bottles with his duct tape.
Scott, try nothing new on race day. You know the rules.
That's going a little too far. Okay, my second one comes from ATRA, the ATRA survey. And this one I thought was very telling, because I recently had a conversation with Julie Fingar, who's the race director for NorCal Ultras. She has some of the premier trail races in Northern California, including the iconic Way Too Cool 50K, the American River 50, and the Rio del Lago 100-mile race.
And she just completed the Badwater 135.
Yeah, she did. Anyway, she and I were having a discussion about people skipping the shorter ultra distances. They were leapfrogging the 50Ks and the 50 milers because the 100 mile distance is the more romantic distance, and that's the one that everybody wants to run. And she was under the belief that maybe some of these shorter races were not getting the participation as they had in the past. So my question comes from that. What is your favorite trail race distance? And almost 40% of the runners preferred that 50K distance or longer. Now, ITRA asked the same question, and it was telling here because they broke it up into smaller categories. But the majority of the people like that half marathon distance to the 50 mile distance. Almost 70% fall within that category.
I think that same survey, Scott, had the 100K to 100 mile distance at 12%. Is that what it shows?
Yes. Yeah.
We do a lot of talking and romanticizing. I like the fact that you use that word about the hundreds, right? The 100K, the 100 mile. But there's not a lot of people when they step into the voting booth that selected the 100K and 100 mile. So maybe we're misled to think that's the most popular and most sought after.
And, you know, it kind of gives me pause myself to think, sure, running these ultra distances, there's some sexiness about that because you're pushing your body to new limits. But I think that I need to maybe try some of these shorter trail runs. You know, a 10K trail run, I could have a lot of fun at a 10K trail race instead of maybe going out on a Saturday for my regular training run.
If AJW is here, he might say, yeah, well, why don't you just get out and sign up for a race?
That's exactly what he would say.
Well, so he has made an appearance on the show. That's good. Hey, so since we're talking about distances, and my favorite part of any race, as you know, Scott, is the sleeping part. Mm-hmm. And I think that what they're asking the question here isn't how much do you like to sleep during the race, but how much do you sleep normally at night? And the bell curve hit right in here with all the studies that we've talked about in the past, that 44% are in the 7-hour mark, and then the other majority just right around it, 6 or 8 hours. So that seems to be the sweet spot. And we need to be sleeping because that's when the repair happens and that's when our improvement happens. So sleep is training, and that's my motto.
Since the survey was self-assessed, do you think people were lying about their sleep? Do you think that they put down 8 hours just because they knew that that's the right amount they should be getting instead of what they're realistically getting?
I think that's a great observation. And as I was looking through the survey, I was wondering how I would answer on a lot of these. And I think many of my answers were, what do I wish it would be? What do I strive for? What would I like it to be? You know, when they say, how many hours do you train or how many miles do you train? I'm going to give my wish answer there and maybe not my realistic answer.
Yeah. One of the things that I liked in the ATRA survey was the question, do you run with poles? Mm. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a number of years, you know that Don and I just love running with poles. In fact, that's probably our default, even when we're going out for a training run, is to carry our poles with us. And I think that we're seeing more people out there with poles. I think that here in the United States, there are still races that don't allow you to use poles. I'm hoping that changes in the future. But according to ATRA, about a third of the people said that they sometimes run with poles. I was surprised because I don't know whether a third of my friends run with poles. What do you think?
Well, I think there's so many advantages. We've done, you know, we have a good relationship with Lakey, and we just love the fact that there's so many advantages to it, and we talk about it all the time. I just couldn't see not running with a set of poles, uphill, downhill, security. There's so many pluses to it.
I think from a training standpoint, you get a little bit more of an upper body workout too.
Well, you got to use a hydration vest though. Hey, I have one here that I got out of ITRA as well, and it talks about how many sessions do you run on the road per week? And see, I don't know if you saw that one, Scott, but what percentage of the people do you think run on the road per week? At least one training session. And these are trail runners we're talking to.
So I am a self-proclaimed trail snob, and it's to my detriment. If I don't have time to get up to the trail, sometimes I will skip a training run more times than not. So I did remember seeing the question, but I don't remember what the results were. But I'm going to say it's low. I'm saying less than 20% run on the pavement during the week.
Scott, you're in good company by refusing to get out on the road, because 57% of people said if it's not on the trail, then it's not a run. And so 57% of the people are not even going out on a road run. 25% said, I'll go out one time per week, but no more. And so trail runners like to run the trail. Once you've gone trail, you don't want to go back. And I think that's what people are seeing.
Hey, Don, on right near there, there's another question about track workouts, which I can count on my hand that has four fingers amputated, how many times I've trained on a track. Mm-hmm. Do people train on the track? What did ITRA say?
Well, the people that train on the track actually win at a lot of the races, because I think you need a little bit of speed work, and it's a great place to do the speed work. Although you can take a section and do some quick fartleks and turnover work on a trail, because train like you race. Oh, I get it. So, Scott, if you're referring to the stat that talks about track workout, how many sessions do you run on the track per week? We have a lot of people that believe in track work and love it. 29% of people do it two times per week, and 32% once a week. So they're getting out there quite a bit.
Wow.
There is only, if you're looking for the people in your category, Scott, only 4% of the people do none. So join your small group.
So when I was at the trailhead this morning, there was only one other car in the parking lot. Is that because everybody was at the track?
That's right.
All right. I love to talk about running shoes. Mm-hmm. And if you're a trail runner, you probably have a garage full of running shoes.
Can we pause for just a second there, Scott, and just talk about running shoes?
Yeah.
About why do we accumulate them? Why do we have a garage full of them? And I can tell you, I can lead with this, that I have a hard time separating from a pair of shoes that have served me well. I have a very deep connection and relationship with that shoe. And I almost feel like it's like having a dog that's kind of old and worn out and served you well and served the farm or whatever you have them on, and you kick them out the door and you say, no more. You don't do that.
I think it's a little bit different than a living thing, Freeman.
not to me. And there's a number of people that are listening that say, you know what, you're right, and that's why I have a garage full. Why do you have a garage full, Scott, if you don't have a sentimental relationship with these shoes?
It's laziness, pure and simple. I look at them and I go, they still look okay. And in fact, if you were to go through some of the quote unquote, I'm making air quotes, retired shoes that I have in my garage.
Yeah.
If you were to look at them, you could say, you know, those still have a lot of miles on them.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I love taking out a new pair of shoes. It's mm-hmm. a motivator for me. If I'm feeling a little bit in a slump with my training, a pair of new shoes brings me out of that slump. I go and get a pair of new shoes, and it's a lot of fun. It feels good right out of the box, and it's fun to take a new pair of shoes out on the trail.
So they're your slump buster, getting out there and getting those shoes on. Let's talk for a minute, Scott, about being a little more charitable instead of just keeping them to yourself inside of your garage. Maybe there's some donation boxes for people that want to have serviceable trail shoes.
I don't feel comfortable putting a smelly pair of trail shoes in a donation box. But maybe I should wash them. Maybe I should spend some time. But let's get back to the statistics and the survey.
I didn't mean to derail your statistic.
And this was a question. And realize this is the international audience here, 100 different countries, 10,000 recipients or survey takers. The big number, 40.8% of the people say they go through two pair of running shoes a year. And then it skews down from there. So, you know, only about 11% go through four pair of running shoes per year. How many pair of running shoes do you go through, Don?
Well, I've got a lot of slumps to bust. So I've got a number more than I'd prefer to admit.
Yeah, I think I probably go through about four a year. And like I said, it's not because they're worn out necessarily. I think it's just because I need something new, something exciting to get me out there.
Well, I mean, I can get behind that. And there's a lot of great shoes going out there. And there's always hope. You know, if you get a new pair of shoes, they might be a fast pair of shoes. Do you remember being a kid, Scott? For those that have traveled around the sun as many times as I have, the PF Flyer. Now, that was a shoe that if you put those on, you could really scream down the road and make turns fast. They were an amazing shoe. And I always hope for that when I put on a new pair of shoes. I'm hoping they're going to have that PF Flyer feeling.
Who made that shoe?
I don't even know. I'm somebody. Ryan, look up the PF Flyer and see what you can learn about that shoe. We might find out that it was an early founder of Hoka or something. We don't know.
I will tell you, you know, speaking of brand names, I was surprised how many different brands of trail shoes there are. Mm. That was one of the questions on both surveys was what brand of trail shoes do you run in? And I mean, if you were to ask me right now, name 10 trail running shoes, I would be hard pressed to tell you 10 brands, but there's probably about 30 pair of shoes that are on this list on the ITRA question. And one of those, which is a very popular shoe in the United States, is Altra. They weren't even listed.
That's why they perform these surveys. So Altra knows where to go and what to do. And one thing I noticed, because I'm looking at that same survey, that Hoka has been gradually building and becoming dominant in the trail running scene. In 2018, they had 14% of the audience and gradually increased to 25% in 2022, a gradual increase all the way through. So their marketing department, their development department, they're hot right now.
I was surprised. There are some shoe companies here I maybe need to go check out. There's some that I've never heard of. And again, this is the international one. There's a shoe called Raid Light. Have you ever heard of Raid Light?
You bet. Those guys are over there with all kinds of gear and reasonably priced. There's a lot of hydration vests over there when I went and ran
really?
Tour. Yeah. Oh, they're big. Yeah.
I didn't know. I mean, coming from a ski background, Technica was a really popular ski boot. I didn't know they made running shoes, but they're on there.
So the PF Flyers were originally owned by BF Goodrich? I don't know who that is.
BF Goodrich is a tire company.
And then it was owned by Elytra Corporation, a parent of Converse, and then owned by New Balance.
The Converse PF Flyer, huh?
No, I think the BF Goodrich tire company PF Flyer, and that's why you could run so fast. They were used to making tires traveling 60 plus miles an hour and cornering well, and that's exactly what I felt when I put those on. And those traditional blue and red little stripes right on the side really gave it the extra performance edge that you couldn't get anywhere else unless you had a pair of PF Flyers.
Okay, Don, you're up.
You know what? There's at least two people listening to this that know what I'm talking about. All right. So I'm up. You know where I want to go? I want to go into the community once again, because that's one of the things we love talking about and makes, I think, makes the sport so special are the people. And they asked this question. It's a brand new question for 2022. And this is at ATRA, the American Trail Running Association. Do you feel safe while running on the trails? Mm. I'm just going to ask you that, Scott. Before we talk about numbers or percentages, do you feel safe or feel insecure about running on the trail?
I don't. Not at all.
Do you think you have a wonderful daughter and she is in her 20s? Would you have a problem with her going out and running on the trail, or would you fear a little bit for her?
I bought her years ago one of those little key ring mace sprays. Mm. So yeah, of course I would be. I would try to encourage her to go out with someone else. Yes.
91% of the people say that they do feel safe most of the time, and only 6 responded sometimes, and 1% said no, they don't feel safe at all. So the trail is a safe place to go, or at least people feel safe. And then I started thinking about, what are the things to fear out there? You know, animals, maybe that's what they're thinking about, because this term safe, do you feel safe on the trail? It's kind of open-ended. Are you worried about a cougar or a snake? Are you worried about another human? Are you worried about a rock or a root? I mean, please define safe. So I'm not so sure that question was too deep and kind of left it open-ended.
Have you ever been threatened? Felt threatened out on the trail?
Oh, only by myself. I'm my biggest enemy out there. So no, I don't think I have not. But I can tell you a story that one night I was running back in the dark. And it was on a trail, and there was a large slope covered in trees on the right. And some guy came tumbling down and screaming, yelling as he's coming down. And he landed where? Right on the trail. Not right in front of me, but I came around a corner and I saw him. And I guess he had been drinking down by the river, walked up as high as he could, fell asleep, and didn't know which way to turn and walked back down. And he was lost. And I ended up leading him back to my car. He ran with me, or walked with me, and then I took him back to where he started. So he was, that's probably my biggest fearful story.
Yeah, and maybe some of those where you were hallucinating too. I think you got a little scared when you saw some of that. Here's another one that I don't know whether it's what the trend is, but running with a GPS watch. And I was recently looking at a photo of my first 50-mile race, and I was wearing a watch that had a foot pod. I don't even know if they make foot pods anymore, but it wasn't a GPS watch. It didn't have any GPS capabilities at all, but what it had was a foot pod that measured your stride length and could keep track of how many miles you ran.
Was it accurate? Was it accurate?
It was extremely accurate. Hmm. Yeah, it was. I was surprised. But anyway, I mean, I've been wearing a GPS watch for a long, long time, and now you can, you know, get into a GPS watch fairly inexpensive. The Apple watches now all have GPS on them. That's one of the things. ATRA says that 78% of the American runners are using GPS watches.
Hmm. Does it list there how many runners actually wear two watches like yourself, Scott, where they have an Apple Watch on one side and your Garmin on the other?
Well, they're used for different things, Don.
Yeah. When you figure that out, you come back and put it in the show notes, would you?
Although I will say that the GPS watch that I have was mm-hmm. close to $1,000. Mm-hmm. My Apple Watch, I can't remember, are they like $300?
Well, it depends which one you buy.
And the Apple Watch, I've done many, many, many runs with measuring distance with both of them, and they're both right on the money. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to have a GPS watch.
There's quite a bit of features on that $1,000 watch that you have, but I'm thinking back to a race that I did early on when you were wearing your foot pod. I was wearing the Timex thing you'd strap on your arm and it would read to your watch. And then on the other wrist, I was like you, I had two watches on, Scott, and the other was a heart rate monitor. Mm. So I had everything I needed for this 50-mile race that I was doing, American River 50. I was equipped with distance and heart rate. I knew those were two important things. And so I get to an aid station, and we're about three quarters of the way through. And I asked the guy working the aid station, I said, "Hey, do you know what time it is?" And he looked at me and said, "Seriously?" I couldn't change my watches because then I'd lose my data, or I didn't know how to do it. My brain wasn't working.
Well, according to ITRA, just so you know, Apple is the sixth highest or sixth most frequented GPS watch out there. About 3% of people use their Apple Watch as their GPS watch. The thing that surprises me was I was surprised that Garmin has a 60% market share with the respondents here. So Garmin still dominates that product category. Suunto is number two, and then Coros comes in at number three. The fourth one is they don't have a GPS watch. Then Polar, and then Apple.
So there's the fourth group that just said, I'm not going to choose anything.
Here's a question I have for you, Don. When you go out there and use your GPS watch, do you ever go back and look at the data?
No, I don't.
I never go back. And I probably should. I don't know.
Why do you wear two of them? Maybe that's why you don't do it, because there's too much work involved.
I do it more for the current data. As I'm running, knowing how long I am going, keeping track of heart rate and the distance that I've gone and how much I have left to go. But once I finish and I upload that data to either my Garmin Connect or to Strava or whatever I'm doing, I never go back and look at it to see if my heart rate is coming down or my speed is coming up. I probably should look at that more frequently.
You talk about the heart rate monitor and using that on your runs. I think I'm not using that heart rate monitor to keep track of myself. I think I'm more measuring whether I think the heart rate monitor is correct. I say, it says that I'm at 145. No, I'm not at 145. I'm at 125. It doesn't know what it's doing. I trust myself in the way that I feel more than these numbers coming up. So I don't even know why I wear it. I look at it. If I don't like it, I go, "Oh, that's erroneous data. I'm not going to watch it." But if it's right where I want it, I'm thinking, yeah, that watch is good and I'm feeling good. That's I shouldn't even be wearing it.
Do you remember back in the day, and then we can do some back in the day dream music here, Ryan. But back in the day.
Do we have back in the day dream music?
Maybe. Back in the day, we would be running with our heart rate monitors. And if you ran too close to your partner, you could get erroneous readings. You would connect to your running partner's heart rate monitor. I think it was you. You'd go, "How come my heart rate's at 185? It should be like 130. And you were connected to my heart rate.
And for those that have not been on at least two podcasts with Scott Warr, we talk about his heart rate monitor. And you know, I think he has a hummingbird heart, you know, it's some kind of transplant, because his heart beats very quickly and rapidly. He doesn't breathe hard. He's not working hard. We have conversational pace, but our heart rates are completely separate. So 185 sounds like somebody climbing a hill, gasping for breath, but not with Scott.
Crash-free energy is what you want. You can is that energy source.
There's nothing worse, Scott, than being in the middle of a run and you've got a stomach that isn't cooperating. With UCAN, you don't have to worry about that.
They have a proprietary low glycemic complex carbohydrate they call the superstarch that absorbs quickly. It doesn't upset your stomach and it has a slow release. So you're not going to have the peaks and the valleys that you have with other sugar products.
Whether you choose the Edge Energy, which is a portable energy, comes in an easy to use package, or the energy powder, energy bars, energy and protein, they all protect your stomach and allow you that slow released constant energy.
And you can sign up for their MVP subscription package and save money. Make sure that you get 20% off your first order at checkout by going to ucan.co/TRN, or you can use the code TRN20, or just go to our website, trailrunnernation.com, click the deals tab at the top, and just scroll down to UCAN, and all the information is there.
Part of ATRA, one of their questions, and it jumped right out of me, Scott, and I want to make sure that I talk about it before you bring it up. It's, do you feel part of the trail running community?
Yeah, I remember that.
That's close to my heart. And 75% of people feel like they're part of the community. And I think that's fantastic. And to have 75% of the people participating feel that they're part of a community more than just participating in an activity. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. If I was a rollerblader, I would not be part of that 75%. I don't even know where the community is, but maybe I might go out and rollerblade. I really like it that trail runners identify as part of that community. And it makes me think, well, that other 25%, how do we make them feel if we're part of the 75? What do we do to bring that other 25% into feeling that they're part of us? And go ahead. I have an idea, but I see you ready to speak.
Well, I just want to say something that's related to that. A lot of us have found that for whatever reason we got into trail running, whether that was to experiment and see what is possible with your own body, or whether it's to get in shape, or whether it is to enjoy nature. But most of us stay in it because of that community interaction. We just love the people and love the attitude and the culture of the community.
Trail running is hard. We talk about that. There's always a little bit of suffering that gets involved, and the greatest stories talk about trying to get through those obstacles and tricks of the trade. And that's one of the things that we try to talk about here with experts, people that have been there, done that, or studied that. And we take those golden nuggets and make sure that we spread them out and make them available for everybody. And I believe that's why we become a community, because when things are hard, that people have to bind together and become one. And we had a podcast. We should go back and listen to it, Scott, because I think it was a very good one with Sebastian Younger about tribe. Mm-hmm. And he talked about when things get hard, that people come together in a cohesive unit, because that's how we survived. In the past, that's how we, with thin skin, fairly weak, not real fast, no fangs, how did we survive? And we only survived because we were a community and we worked together. And I think that's what drives us. That's what really pushes us to enjoy the trail running community, because we have something hard and it works because we all get together. We run together in a group trying to get through hard. We pull into aid stations when we're at races and we get refurbished and rejuvenated and sent back out with a positive attitude. There's a lot of things that make us community. Even if it's going down to the running store and walking in and seeing one of your brethren or sister in there and saying, "Hey, I need some hydration solutions. I need a vest, I think." And so there's a number of things that make us community, and it's more than just being on the trail. You know, being a trail runner is something that we do full time.
And ATRA does get into that a little bit in their survey and talks to people, how do they help build the community? Mm. And there's some good responses there, from signing up on a social media account and following a group in social media, or reading the trail running magazines, or like I Run Far, all the many different great podcasts that are out there. But I want to say one of the things that I enjoy probably as much as I do running now is volunteering. I had a phenomenal time volunteering at the aid station out at Western States. I haven't done a whole lot of trail maintenance work, but I know there's a group here locally that often goes out with their chainsaws and their picks and everything and goes out and does trail work. That's hard work. And that really bonds that community together. I need to do more of that. And I think that's, like you said, if it was just to go out and enjoy a trail run, an activity, I don't think we would have this sense of community that we're talking about here, that people feel they belong to.
Yeah, I think if you're that 25% that don't feel like you're part of the community, that it's important to get out there and do some of the things that Scott's talking about. It's a volunteer at an aid station. It's pickup time, volunteering for that, or going out and doing the important trail maintenance, taking care of the trail that you're running on.
And if you are listening to this and you're thinking, well, how do I find these groups? A couple great ways is just to go to the local running store and ask how you can get involved. Go to Ultra Sign Up and find out where the races are, and go onto the race website. And all of them have volunteer tabs. Find out how you can just go and volunteer at a race. I think that's a really, really good way to be part of the community, to give back to the community, and really feel like you belong.
And I'm going to throw one more out there, and that is during our training runs, when we're out on the trail, be part of the community. Make sure that you say hello to other runners as they come by. Make contact. You know, even if you're have a set of earbuds on and you're in the middle of a great podcast that you're listening to, you know, acknowledge that that person's coming by, because that's what makes us a community, being out there and being involved. And if you say hello to a fellow trail runner, guess what? They're going to give you that same hello back. They're going to give you some energy that you're passing out. Even if it's not a high five, it's going to be passed through the air of saying, yeah, I'm part of this community. And that's how you feel part of it, is when you participate in it. So don't run by people and just give them the trail and turn your shoulder. Make sure you're inviting and you say hello.
Some of my favorite people that I've run with are those that will actually stop. our good friend Jeff, yeah. We'd be running down the trail and our good friend Jeff would stop as someone was coming the other direction, and he'd introduce himself, and his common question was, what are you training for? And that would start just a very easy conversation, and we'd learn and become friends with someone new almost every single trail race.
But if you don't do a Jeff and stop people, it's still okay. You can still extend a good hello, because maybe that person is trying to get something done, get ready for a race. Maybe they're trying to get a Strava time. Who knows what they're doing? But it doesn't take any time or energy to give a nod and how you doing.
And I will say something I'm working on is not being offended by someone that doesn't say hi back.
Oh, I'm offended, Scott. I'm offended by that.
Well, they may be new to the trail and not know that there's a common procedure out there or some courtesy. And so I'm giving them a little bit of grace. I'm saying, you know what? They're probably new. Let's continue to say hi to those people, and eventually they'll learn.
Well, Scott, you know, like you say in the beginning of each podcast, we might become better people too. And I think that you're hopefully turning me into a better person. So I'm not so jaded when people don't say hello. But I'll tell you, there's more of that now than there used to be. There's more people not saying hello than in some years past. And I don't like the looks of that. I hope this puts people not on notice, but I hope people are aware of it and start realizing that some people are a little bit butthurt when that happens, and that's me.
Maybe we need to stop, like Jeff. Stop them. Block the trail.
I think
and say, hey, my name's Scott. I want to be your friend. Let's move on.
that's exactly what I would say if you stopped me on the trail. I'd say, let's move on.
Here's one that I find quite fascinating and a little bit shocking, because as you know, we have a lot of coaches that come on the podcast because they're knowledgeable. They have a lot of information, and we learn a lot from these coaches. Mm. So both in the ATRA and the ETRA survey, they ask the question, do you have a coach? And I was actually surprised how few people have coaches. In ATRA, they said only about 14% have ever had a coach. On the ETRA website, which is the larger of the two surveys, 68% said that they don't have coaches. And I find that fascinating, because it's actually, you know, 10 years ago, if you probably didn't know someone that was making a living coaching ultra distance running. And now there's a whole lot, and boy, are they worth their weight in gold. I've hired a coach, and I think I became a much, much better runner having someone that was looking at my daily workouts and pushing me to different limits and having me try different things.
I think a lot of the outlets that we have now, that coaches are able to send their voice so we can hear the things that they know, yep, have given us confidence that, you know what, there's someone for me. They have a lot to teach me. And before these outlets that we're using now, it was a mystery. And so I think that with social media and with the coaches on that social media, we have confidence and we reach out. And I think that so the number is going to continue to grow.
One of the other surveys questions that I won't get into right now, but revolves around if you've ever been injured. And I think that coaches can help avoid a lot of those injuries, because when I first started running, I would Google 50K training plan or 50-mile training plan, and I'd get this spreadsheet that says, this is how many miles I need to run on Monday and how many I need to run on Tuesday. And I would just follow that as if it were the gospel. Well, you know, we're all different. We're the experiment of one that we've talked about many times on this podcast. And that's where a coach can come in and say, you know what, if you're feeling a little niggle here, let's do this instead of this, where you break away from that static spreadsheet training plan and you customize the plan.
You mentioned injuries, and that was one of the surveys that ITRA does have on here. What do you think the most injured area is for trail runners? How do they respond?
I remember seeing this question. I don't remember the details, but I know that the common injuries that I've had, IT band and plantar fasciitis, were not on there.
Yeah, I was interested to read the ones they've listed. Sprain of an ankle was number one. Sprained ankle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember following behind experienced trail runners when I started, and I'd watch their ankles, their feet. They'd hit and roll their ankle, and then just keep going. They didn't even limp. They just, it's like their ankles just learned how to roll. They learned how to take the weight off and just keep going. I knew that if I put my foot down and twisted, it would be all over. I would be on an ice pack and looking for a crutch. Do you know the second thing? If that was 39%, this is the one that surprised me the most, and it was called a scratch. That's, what the heck?
Is that an injury?
It is an injury on this list, 35%. And then on the way up.
I would say 100% of people have scratches when they get back from every training run.
Yeah.
At least I do. One of the other things, and again, it's just, I find it fascinating to go through these survey results because I want to see where I fit within the community. I do feel like I belong to the community, but where do I fit? And this is one that made me smile a little bit, is how many hours in the average do you train per week? And this is running only, not any cross training or anything. How many hours per week do you run? And the big group is between 4 to 6 hours. And then there's kind of it's almost a perfect bell curve. So that's the tip of the bell curve, the 4 to 6 hour, but then it is pretty even between the 2 to 4 and the 6 to 8. So that 2 to 8 hours a week is kind of the sweet spot of the bell curve.
Scott, I could imagine taking a survey like this. And this survey that I'm taking is a bit sophisticated. It's just not, you know, fill in the blank. This is, you make your answer and then an alarm goes off if it's untrue. Mm-hmm. So I would say, yeah, I train 8 hours per week, and it goes, no, wrong. You actually only train 3 hours per week. So every time I went through on all of these, I imagine the most sophisticated type of questionnaire would be the truth serum. It would actually tell you if you're answering appropriately.
Well, the one thing that makes me smile a little bit here is I mentioned that I had a coach for almost a year and I learned so much from him. I'll tell you, it was David Roach, and I learned so much from him. And one of the things I learned is you don't need to be out there for 12, 15, 16, 20 hours, even if you're training for a long race, that going out and getting, you know, a 4 mile easy run in or a 6 mile easy run in, you can easily train for some of these longer distance runs on a 8 hour or a 10 hour running week easily.
Yeah. And didn't we learn that the first 10 minutes gives you the biggest benefit? I mean, that's where you're going to gather most of it, going from a rest state to a running state and turning the motor on. And so I'm going to tie two things together, Scott. Remember your saying, one is better than none.
Yeah.
Right? So
we still need to order those hats, don't we?
One is better than none. And so that first 10 minutes, that really would motivate me to get out there, is I'm going to run 10 minutes. And then I'm going to decide if I'm too busy or I don't feel like it. I'm going to get my first 10 in because I'm going to get some benefit from that. And what happens after 10 minutes, Scott? You're usually like, you're in for the full, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. You get that first bit in, and the rest will follow.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun to go through both of these surveys to see where we belong within the American Trail Running Association and also the international. I'm finding that the that those lines are getting blurred. Mm. It was not too long ago that you could go to a race and pick out who the international runners and who are the local runners in the United States. And I think that those lines are being blurred. As we were at Western States just less than a month ago, it was very hard for me to tell, oh, that person's from France or that person's from Kentucky.
Well, Scott, that's because over 25% of the runners were from overseas. So that was very hard.
Well, my point is as technology grows, as we share, as we become a community, that community is now becoming larger. It's not just a California trail running community or a Western United States. At one point, there was kind of a joking battle between the Eastern United States and the Western United States, the Beast Coast and the West Coast. And I think that those lines are blurring. I think we're becoming one community, and I like to see that.
Well, I like that we're common. We all carry the same flag, but I do like the competition between the Beast Coast or Best Coast and the West Coast. It's fun. You know, I mean, football is a great sport, but it's nice that we all have teams and we can razz each other. So I hope that spirit always exists in everything that we do.
As always, I will include links to both of these surveys so you can take a look. We just touched on a few things in both of these surveys. And so you may get have some fun looking at them and reviewing them and seeing where you fit.
So go out and run. Mas. And now we've reached the end of the podcast, really the finish line, Scott, where we give high fives as we're coming through the big arch. And we're going to thank our executive producer and editor, Ryan Warr.
And our social media guru, Yana Gibalova.
And our website graphic engineer, Katie Burke.
We also want to thank the Patreon supporters. If you want to become one, you can go to our website, hit the Support Us tab, and you can sign up on our Patreon channel. We also want to thank our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley. Doug Crumley is a coach for your finances. He is a private wealth advisor with Crumley & Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Visit him at www.dougcrumleyjr.com.
Scott, we mentioned the deals page quite often. That's on our website, trailrunnernation.com. And we've made a lot of changes there, and we're really proud of it.
There's a lot of information there. Of course, there's the deals page where you can get all sorts of discounts on gear that we love and trust. We also have all of our other podcasts. We also have the Training Principles link. So we just started the Training Principles episodes at the beginning of this year. All those are kind of organized in one area. So if you're just getting into trail running and want to know the basics of where to start, go to the Training Principles tab. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We don't fill your mailbox full of junk every week or twice a week. Only when there's important things to happen, you'll also be notified when a new podcast hits the air.
So go to trailrunnernation.com.